Welcome to the Points Hoarder Podcast. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this edition.
Eins.
Zwei.
Drei.
Vier. Okay, is it actually Vilnius or is it Vilnius? I've heard it said Vilnius.
Well, we can discuss it online.
On the line. Resident European.
What?
I would say Vilnius.
What does that even mean? You're from around here. What are you talking about? You're within, like, within an hour flight. Yeah.
You're living in New York and you ask, oh, you're Kentucky's right here.
All right. So are we recording already?
Yeah, we are.
So he's going to have him cut this? Like, or is he going to leave it in?
I might have to leave that part in.
Hello and welcome to episode 43 of the Points Hoarder Podcast. It's January 23, 2014. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hello from a cold Vilnius.
A cold Vilnius. I wasn't even going to mention that yet. I was going to let people figure it out later.
That it's cold?
That we're cold? Or?
And then we're in Vilnius.
Hello from a cold place.
I think that shit might have sailed now, boss.
Not with the technology we have.
That would require way more editing effort than I really wanted to put into this.
We are in Vilnius, Lithuania, and we're hanging out this weekend.
Drinking Lithuanian beers.
Lithuanian beers. What are you on right now?
I have moved on, just so our listeners know, and if you've been following us on Twitter, you all seen the teaser shot. We're doing a beer tasting as part of tonight's recording. I'm currently drinking a Kalnopolis Pilsner. Actually, I'm sorry, that's what was the first pour that you all are still working on. I'm ahead of you, not surprisingly. I'm now on to Svituris Extra. Yeah.
That looks like a Michelob bottle.
It does look a little bit like a Michelob bottle. This beer is, according to the label, acknowledged by beer lovers and experts. It's not clear what's acknowledged other than the fact that it's just beer. but, you know, hey, what are you going to do? I actually like it better than the first one we tried. I like this better than the Pilsner. It's got a bit more body, a bit more flavor to it. Later in the show, you may hear us talking about the original Kalnopolis, or the Kalnopolis 730, which is a 7% brew.
Oh, it's not a morning beer.
Well,
all beer is morning beer.
It's 7%, though. It could get you up and going.
And knock you right back out.
So this is why we usually come to these types of places, is to drink beer.
Yes.
And that's why we're here this year. And apparently, Lithuania actually has a lot of breweries just outside of Vilnius. There's a bunch of, like, that outside, right?
I found a bar in my travels today that serves 80 different types of local Lithuanian brewed beers.
We're going there later,
we
right?
We will be going there later.
So we have to remember.
They're all bottled, though, so, but they.
Okay. We have to remember that we've tried these four, so we have 76 to go.
That's right.
You think we can knock them out tonight? I leave tomorrow, so early in the morning.
Yeah, you gotta leave even earlier than I do.
Yeah.
Depends on if we go to bed. The place closes at midnight, though. I don't think we'll get all 76 in.
Damn.
Four or five a piece?
Split
okay,
it up.
Okay, and now we're up to 20. And we're going to need more people. Anyway.
So listeners, there's some listeners that we could,
If any of you are here right now, 4 days ago when you're listening to this recording, come on over. We're going to have a great time.
Well, let's just talk about, like, how did everybody get here? I mean, Rolo, you were already in Europe.
I have been in Europe since January 2nd. I left the day of the snowstorm, and I missed the polar vortex, apparently.
And then you come here.
And then I come here to get the effects of it.
Yeah,
so.
Plenty of cold here, too.
And Seth, you came. You went to...
I came in. I'm in transit, actually.
You went to Talon first.
Well, I'm in transit, see.
Okay, got you.
Now, I started in JFK on Wednesday night, and I'll get back to JFK Monday afternoon, and in between, I have no stop longer than 24 hours, so I'm actually in transit this entire trip.
You're going to Helsinki next? Is that where you're heading?
Yeah, I flew JFK Helsinki Tallinn, and that was the return half of a ticket that I booked flew the outbound out of Europe in October. On the BA inaugural, actually, the A380 inaugural, that was that one. So then I flew Tallinn to Riga to Vilnius on Baltic Air with a 22-hour stopover in Riga on a single ticket. And then my return tomorrow, I'll fly, Vilnius, Riga, Helsinki.
On another
Baltic Air. Is it Air Baltic? Baltic Air?
The sign says Air Baltic.
Okay, so Air Baltic.
Which is a Euro bonus partner, apparently.
Are they?
Yes, but only Euro bonus. So,
you know, I should have created an account or something. Oh, well.
And I understand they have great de-icing policies.
Oh, yeah. We took off on a 737 today where ice was visible on the wing's control surfaces. Like,
what did I tell you?
Sparkling in the sun. You could see the ice forming. It was awesome. But anyway, so I go back to Helsinki tomorrow morning, and I'll spend another 20-something hours in Helsinki, and then fly Helsinki-Manchester JFK on a separate American Airlines one-way award. Actually, that was an interesting one. I put out to some of the Wandering Airman blog listeners or readers, how should I go home from this trip? And that one...
They wanted you to use miles.
They wanted me to use miles. It was a surprisingly close vote between that and a paid ticket on Norwegian.
To hopefully get the 787
hopefully get the Norwegian 787 in. I didn't do that. So,
well, because last time you had really bad luck.
Last time I did it, they ended up swapping out for an old HiFly 343, and it was disgusting. We'll see. I'm going to, like, you know, I want to check, did Norwegian actually fly the 787 tomorrow, just to know.
Yeah.
But whatever. I'm getting over it pretty quickly. The added bonus is, thanks to the availability of stopovers on American awards at Gateways, at the North American Gateways, even on only tickets, I booked a separate trip to Los Angeles for June.
So you got a free one-way. Is that what you're saying?
No. I have a nice stopover.
And Foz, where did you fly in from? And
I did.
Have you figured out how you're getting home yet? I mean, you've got like 12 hours or so, right?
I have like 3 different reservations to go home.
I actually have a second one too. I have a reservation Vilnius JFK Frankfurt on Lufthansa that I need to cancel.
Well, Vilnius Frankfurt JFK.
Yeah, whatever.
They don't have a flight. No, never mind.
I did the Dallas Amsterdam flight, and then I did a SAS flight from Amsterdam to Stockholm to Vilnius. And the Stockholm Vilnius was on a Saab Q2000, which nice. I've never done before.
A Saab 2000.
A Saab 2000, right, yeah. Right. Not a Q2000. And it was oversold, interestingly enough.
Did you take a bump?
No, I couldn't take the bump, unfortunately. It would have resulted in me getting at 11:30 last night and going back to Copenhagen to come back.
Oh, that's just, a fun line, though.
It could be. It could be, but it just wasn't worth it.
Oh.
For 150 euro in cash, I was on the fence.
Yeah.
If it was more, I'd consider it, but I didn't really want an SAS voucher because God knows when I would actually use it.
Well, you have to use it for the food on board, right?
Yes, exactly. Like a Coke.
One Coke, please. 150 euro. Yeah.
This is a really bad deal.
I just did a Newark, Brussels, Vilnius. I had a 4-hour connection in Brussels, which gave me time to explore all the different lounge possibilities there. And maybe I'll write that in the post for this on what you can and cannot access. And the fact that once you go to the T-gate, you cannot clear passport control there. You cannot enter Europe. You are stuck there. So,
and yet here you are.
And don't do it. Well, we had to take the bus. They looked at us funny when we got back on the bus.
The T-gates are the U.S. flights leave from?
The T-gates
are the Africa flights. They close off half of the A terminal in the morning bank. It's okay. Weird.
There's no passport control. Like, there's an exit sign, but you walk down there, and there's people standing there going, no. They're shaking their head, no. So one of our other companions, he had actually had a short connection in Brussels and had to do the whole thing in reverse and clear security in Brussels, which if you know what that's like, it is not a pleasant experience. So I'm headed back on the nonstop from Frankfurt to Houston. I actually had a successful same-day change.
Interesting note about Brussels that I learned, if you're on like a United ticket, get your boarding pass reprinted before you go to the transit area or the connecting European.
Because you get the...
Because then you get fast track.
That's what I was wondering. I had a United stock boarding pass, and it scanned it, and it failed.
Yep. But if you get them to reprint it at, in Brussels, you'll actually get fast
track. But do you need business or Star Gold? Because initially you couldn't do it in business.
As long as it's on Brussels.
I mean, you couldn't do it if you were Star Gold.
If it's a Brussels Airlines flight you're on, and you're Star Gold, you will get it.
Yeah, because
I got denied once.
Yeah, I did. I have before too, and I was on an economy flex plus ticket or whatever it's called, and I would have gotten it that way as well. But it was a United boarding pass. Anyway, that's how we got here, and that's how we're getting home. Let's talk a little bit about an apology.
Oh, yeah, I was supposed to do that earlier. I screwed up last time. Sorry. I questioned Foz about the million milers on United, whether they get GPUs or not at 3 million miles in RPUs, and I thought not, but I was wrong.
That was not very sincere.
I was not sincere about it.
I am judging your sincerity.
I have been pretty blunt about the fact that I screwed it up.
I'm giving you a hard time.
So. Okay. I got it wrong.
We actually had a few listeners.
We had a few listeners
that commented on it.
Yes.
And we looked it up. And
thank you to all of you for correcting me. I appreciate that.
The public.
Well, they
public
threatened to stop listening unless we had a.
We demand an apology.
A redaction from the record.
Is that like a black marker for the NSA?
Do we the just people start have spoken.
The TSA black marker?
No, there's actually a function in WordPress that you can put strikeout in.
Okay. Well, so you're going to go back.
Yeah. But also, as long as I'm apologizing, apparently in our last episode we said that we were going to share a link to something about manufacturer spending, like a discussion or something, and we never did, and a couple of our listeners have asked about that too. If anyone knows what we were talking about,
I have to go back and listen to the episode.
Yeah, if anyone knows what we're talking about, please let me know so I can find a link for something. Apparently I promised it to you, so I'd like to fix that.
We got some United news. There's like three stories with United. What else is new? They're furloughing a bunch of flight attendants from the pre-merger United side. Does anyone know the numbers? Is it
700?
750 or something?
It's a big number.
I mean, anyone with like a seniority date after 2006 is basically out.
Really? So they're furloughing the older flight attendants?
No, younger than 2006.
Younger than 2006.
Yeah. Sorry. But
we almost had an apology again coming.
No, but he's actually right in what he said.
Yeah. And
I misunderstood.
Would you like to apologize now?
I apologize.
It's basically anyone who's newer than 2006. Which is a pretty far back way to go. It's basically a combination of the fact that they're retiring all the 752. First, they retired all the 737s, like, back in the Tilton days, I guess. Is Tilton that did that?
Yes.
Suddenly one day they just retired, like, hundreds of aircraft and...
It wasn't one day. I mean, it took them a couple weeks. No, it took six to eight months, but it was very quick for how quickly you can get rid of a fleet of 100 planes.
Yes, they dropped 100 planes very quickly out of the fleet. And then on top of that, they're now starting to retire the 752s and replace them with the 739s. The good news is that at least the new deliveries are coming in as Continental planes.
United
planes. They were Continental orders that are coming in as United planes, so that's helping. But they're retiring faster than they're taking
it. It's not really helping. It's just offsetting one-for-one. Yeah, it's a replacement for the 75s.
Right.
How many flight attendants do you need on 739? It's one less than the...
Still four.
Still four, okay.
Because there are more than 150 seats.
Gotcha.
But fewer than 200.
And
there's plenty of other reasons too, right? I mean, there's the United contract basically costs more per flight attendant hour worked than the Continental contract.
And we know they're not staffing them efficiently, like we learned from the Buenos Aires flight, the Istanbul flight, that they weren't being served by the local bases.
Right. So there weren't local bases. Well, no, by the end there were, but there weren't always even local, whatever. It was
New York's that. Always had a local base. There's
was
always
that an issue with getting them to fly out of Newark, though?
Out of Newark, yeah.
Was Newark not part of the New York base originally for United?
I've had flights out of Newark with New York. New York based attendants and crew.
So, yeah. Okay.
But I mean, isn't there some disagreement with the union itself on who's going to take which contract and?
Oh, right. Yeah. So I mean, that's the thing is, right, the AFA won the vote between, it was AFA or?
AFA over IAM.
Right. So AFA now represents all the United flight attendants, but they're still fighting over what the contract is going to look like as a joint bargaining agreement. And the negotiations are going terribly slowly. So the, sort of paranoid or,
there's a lot of finger pointing going on back and forth. And there's actually a letter from, did you read this letter?
Yes.
It's from the in-flight operations VP to the head of the union about how they're misrepresenting. They're misrepresenting everything they're saying in public.
Yeah. It's basically like we tried to do crossover and you said, offer crossover and you said no, unless we guaranteed no furloughs ever. And we couldn't do that. And so now we're furloughing everybody. They had you could have given them a choice, and instead you're forcing us, there's some weird, issues in the way it's sort of set up. I think that the challenge of the crossover program was, work-wise, they'd be bottom of the list seniority for staffing, right? So you're basically on reserve again.
Yeah.
And I don't know Continental has a lot of flight attendants on reserve, even who are relatively senior seniority-wise, like how long they've been there. My guess is United has fewer. You have to be a lot younger to be on reserve, so that was part of the issue. But if they did the crossover, they were at least allowed to keep their seniority for pay and benefits. So you'd be, getting paid as a 20-year flight attendant, but working shifts. Instead of getting a line or whatever, you'd be assigned reserve as though you were a 0-year.
Yeah, so that was interesting too, because on my Newark to Brussels flight, the flight attendant working my side was. She'd never worked a 764 before, and she'd never been in business first. I thought that was weird. I mean, she must be reserved, right? I mean, that's the only way that could happen.
She could be domestic.
I mean, she's probably domestic, but how is she picking up a Brussels flight? Is it
because she's filling in for someone, or she swapped?
Will they? I guess it could be a swap. I thought the Continental breakdown they have separate bases for domestic, international, Continental, and United doesn't, if I remember correctly.
United does in some cases.
Do they? I thought they just had language.
No, I'm pretty sure they have separate bases as well.
Okay. I know Continental does, and that I thought like you couldn't cross over even.
That's what I thought was strange, was like I figured she'd never worked it before, but.
Interestingly, yesterday or the day before, there was one of the online Twitter travel chats, and Heather O'Poole, who has written a book and is a flight attendant and basically one of the more famous and public flight attendants these days, came out and said it, that business class long haul is actually first class is a relatively junior position in many cases.
Interesting.
Most of the flight attendants, given the choice, the senior ones will take coach because it's a faster service.
And less work.
Than putting up with assholes demanding, that their nuts be warmed.
Which explains why the pursers often work.
I'm shaking my head.
What? you don't like having your nuts warmed?
I do. I like the warm nuts.
Okay. How could you not? Especially in weather like this.
Oh, man.
So anyway, the furloughs thing is a problem.
It's
going to continue. The sort of cynical side of things is that the management is doing this, that if they get enough of the legacy United Flight attendants to quit or no longer be active, when they come around to voting for a new union contract, there'll be enough legacy Continental people that those work rules will take over, and the Continental management, I'm making air quotes there, management wants that because it's so much cheaper.
So do you think...
I don't remember if furloughed people get to vote still or not. I thought they did, but I don't know.
They're still technically part of the union, right?
Right.
So they should. But I guess the question comes up is, are they going to shift the deliveries back to the Continental side if they're furloughing on the United side?
That's a good question. I guess it depends on how many they're pushing out and how quickly, how many 752s they're retiring. My guess is they'll keep them as United deliveries.
They have 90 something 752s. 14 of them aren't going anywhere because they're PS.
Right. But they're supposed to retire like 40 this year or something.
Right.
That's a lot of planes. And they're only taking like 10 or 15 deliveries. So that's a lot of flight attendants you have to draw down.
Yeah.
Even if you keep the deliveries as Legacy United, they have to.
And where's all that capacity going though? I mean, that's a better question.
It's disappearing.
Express. This is what happened when the 737s went away. Oh, you saw a huge surge in CR7s come into this fleet and the E-170s. So when the 737s all went out, you saw all the SkyWest CR7s and the Republic E-170s come in. So
also the E-75 delivery is supposed to start next year or the year after.
Yeah, that's still a little bit off. But yeah.
That'll help.
Just what we need, more regions.
The E-170s are okay.
The 75 is going to be...
X-Plus?
The 75 is going to have 12 first-class seats. It's going to be a nice layout.
Those are fine. It's the CR-7s that I loathe.
Yeah. They're flying those on Austin LAX and Austin San Francisco.
LA Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be a joy to fly. That's also on San Francisco. No, they're flying an Airbus on San Francisco.
Dulles Austin is a CR-7. There's a couple other...
Oh, don't even give me that. I flew Dulles Houston on an E-145.
I've done that once.
That was
Toronto
miserable.
Toronto to Houston was miserable.
It's miserable.
I did to Minneapolis to Houston on E-145.
Even if you want something hot, they don't have anything. So,
anyway, but every seat's first class.
Every seat's first. Yeah, right. if the first class is like Eurobiz,
Eurobiz is way better than E-145. Anyway, what else we got?
Well, these new United Flyer Friendly kits. Have you guys seen these? I've got one on my flight.
I got one as well. I actually got three.
How'd you get three?
I asked.
I should have
asked. You're going to get a flight attendant fired.
It was a half-loaded flight.
You just got another flight attendant sent off.
This is Legacy United.
It was a 763.
It was a 763. It was Legacy United.
Well, that's one more furlough we're talking about.
701 we're up to?
Way to go, Fox.
So which ones did you get?
I got Cleveland, Houston, and Newark, actually.
New York City, excuse me.
Yeah,
I was going to ask that. That was actually, I really enjoy that. The Washington, D.C., the Dulles hub is presented as D.C. friendly, and Newark is represented as NYC friendly.
Sydney, where is Dulles? It's in Reston.
Virginia.
Reston, right?
It's outside of Reston. So the town is Dulles, Virginia.
It should be Dulles friendly or Dulles Reston friendly.
Well, Virginia the friendly. They're all
Virginia
ad-codes.
Friendly. I like that.
Virginia's for lovers. right? Wasn't that their slogan for a while?
That was their slogan for a very long time.
Marketing works sometimes. It's weird.
I'm still bummed they don't have a gum friendly.
Gum friendly?
Or Tokyo. Well, that base is dying slowly.
Yeah, so that's dead. I'm talking about that shit. They killed that one. No, but that's the thing. Is they use the IATA codes for the others, and then NYC and DC. It's like, clearly they want to be, oh, no, we are a New York City airline. even though we're in Newark. Like, which, and to be fair, they are, but
yeah,
it's...
but they do have a decent presence outside of Newark as well.
Yes, I mean, they had a ton of lift out of LaGuardia.
And
yes, out of JFK.
Exactly.
It's fine, but it's very interesting that how they've chosen to market that.
Very true.
It's interesting. I got San Francisco friendly, and it's nice. I mean, it's got the normal contents of the kit, but it feels very Lufthansa-esque.
So when we learned today that we have earplugs still, which what BA no longer does.
Nope.
Yeah,
we have a guest in the room.
We have a
live audience.
Live audience. 2 years in a row now, we've included live audience.
That's right.
In this,
yeah.
One of them became the producer.
Yeah. Well, because last year I actually produced. I was giving you guys facts.
I was giving
you little post-its.
Somehow you've fallen off the wagon.
What do you mean?
You're not giving us notes.
Oh, well, we plan ahead. We don't need
to be fair, he is running, managing this system.
That is true, yes.
I brought the mic. I've been traveling around a microphone for 20 days.
Just for this recording. He's very dedicated. I actually like the new kit. I like those metal.
I think it's cool. I mean, it's a neat little thing to give you.
I think it's more reusable than the
absolutely
pouches. And I say that admitting that I'm using one of those pouches as my military kit right now.
Yeah.
But I like the metal ones better.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to, you can carry something that kind of clasps, locked. Yeah. It's nice. I'll probably take it to New York with me and leave it in the office with a pencil or
whatever. Use it as a pencil box?
Yeah, box so people don't steal my stuff. Although they'll probably just steal the box. So, these are who
it does say friendly on it, so maybe they just mean that they're supposed to take it.
Roland, weren't you going to tell us a story about something?
Oh, and my Lufthansa flight.
Yes. We want to hear about this.
So I flew from Dubai to Munich, and as soon as I got on the plane, I was flying in first on a United award, and the purser, is it? I guess whoever the lead is, they call him purser.
In-flight service manager. Yeah.
He comes out to me and he's like, you're the only one in first class today. So he's like, and he like did a calculation of how much time I could spend in every seat if I wanted to.
Did you make them alternate like bed and not?
Yeah, he goes, you let me know which bed you want and you set it up for you if you want multiple beds. I'm like, he goes, today the flight time's a little longer because of the wind, so you get more time in each seat. I'm like, okay, I'll consider that.
Thank you.
But so I had breakfast and then I was very tired, so I went to sleep. And when I woke up, he came up to me and he's like, oh, I have a very special request. He's like, I hope you don't mind. He goes, I have to shut off all the lights again. And I kind of didn't understand what he meant. But then he just started closing all the shades and like made the cabin dark as if it was nighttime. He told me that they were having some technical issues that he'd seen on the way there. And the Lufthansa Technic crew has asked him to take a picture of the window side where he thought the technical problem was. So I had to help him photograph and identify the...
So you got put to work.
I got put to work.
What was the technical problem?
They don't know. He said, when you shut off all the lights, there was this like bright orange thing on the window. And he said there's no electrical light or wires there, so they're not sure. It's very mysterious is the word he used.
Well, you took a picture of it.
I took a picture of it and I showed it to Steven yesterday and we're going to post it.
Yeah. I think it's like electromagnetic, like type, like some kind of, static on the outside of the plane.
It's only on the sun side. The first thing I asked was, is it on both sides of the plane? He said, no, it's only on the side that hits the sun. So it's got to be heating up something and it creating some kind of...
It's like an
electrostatic. What type was this?
It was an A330 with a new F
out
of Munich. The pilot came out. Apparently, while I was sleeping, they couldn't really troubleshoot, so they had to wait until I was up and contribute to the process. I actually had to take the picture for them because they were like, how using the flash? I'm like, it's never going to come out. So I turned the flash off.
They're flight attendants, not photographers.
Yeah, yeah. So I turned the flash off, took the picture, and then I took my own picture for my own reference.
And what kind of compensation did you get for this?
Well, I didn't ask for anything because flying first by yourself was like the equivalent of having a private jet. So... Three flight attendants.
So it's basically Lufthansa's new slogan is fly with us, work for us.
Work for us. Employee friendly.
Employee friendly, yeah.
Nice.
So it was good.
We won't furlough you.
He goes, he flies that route all the time. He goes, if you want to know the answer to the mystery, he's like, just fly the same route. He's like, you'll see me on this flight.
So you have to now fly that route again to find out what happened.
And hope that he's on that flight that day. But
now, how are you going to get there with the mileage redemption increase?
Well, I might have to do it like next week.
On your way back from Madrid?
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's an important point. We're now mere days away from the new United award charts going into effect.
The unfriendly
changes.
But they
gave you a new kit, so that makes up for it.
Yeah. The amenity kit is much, well, if you fly on United Metal, you get that new amenity kit for the next couple of weeks. So, you know, that'll make up for the fact that when you book a Lufthansa first class ticket to Dubai, it's now what god-awful number of points?
1 million miles?
140,000 or something like that.
One way?
Is it only for a few more weeks they're doing the kits? I thought it was until March.
The kits are out, yeah. Well, a couple months. 8 weeks, it's a few. The award charts are changing. And yeah, everyone, I mean, there have been a couple, it's actually one I'm interested in what you guys think. There's been a suggestion that the best solution, because date changes are supposed to not require a reissue, is to book, especially if you want Lufthansa first, book Lufthansa first now, then...
Keep changing it for every date.
Well, cancel the segments out, and so you just keep the shell of the award, and then put the, if you can, put the exact same segments back in at a later date.
Now, can you do a change in routing as long as the origin and destination don't change?
That's not what they've said.
No. What they've said is date only.
Okay.
But my concern with this approach is once you drop the segments out, that's sufficient to kill it.
Once they drop the segments, I don't think people are thinking about it. Once they drop the segments out of in shares, once they drop the segments out, the segment's gone. They re-release the space. The space doesn't no longer exist.
Well, no, that's not the issue. They're talking about they're saying, okay, if I book a ticket for I book a ticket for Feb 1.
Yep.
And it's JFK Frankfurt in first class. Easy example. Then I call up and say, I'm not going to take the flight on February 1st. I want to change the dates, but I don't have my new date yet. Remove the segment and leave the.
You can actually
ticket issue, you could do that online. Yeah. You could instead of choosing redeposit miles,
you keep the certificate issued. And then at some point later, call in and say, I found JFK Frank, in mid-June, say I found JFK Frankfurt in first class for July 1. Not gonna happen, but go for it. I wanna take that same issued award and put that segment back in it. It's the same routing and same exact segments with just a date change.
In theory, it should work, according to what they've said.
I think once you pull the segments out, it's no longer just a date change. I think the idea of a rolling,
every day,
like Foz's 6 month long SDC, wasn't quite that good, but it was close. The idea of if you can call in and change it repeatedly, the problem you run into there is for someone who has no status, that's a lot of changes.
And finding availability, because it's like you get to a point where you're like, there's no availability, then you're screwed.
Now, is there any way to get MileagePlus to issue a paper certificate for the reward?
No.
So I was wondering, do you think I should do this? I have the trip coming up in March. You think I should try this with a return? Narita, Frankfurt, Houston. The odds of Frankfurt, Houston opening up two seats in first
are pretty low,
but I could find probably something else to the U.S.
Okay. Like Orlando or...
Yeah.
I know you don't like Dallas.
I've already done the Dallas flight and I did not enjoy it.
Denver, maybe.
Atlanta.
I could do Atlanta or Detroit. Yeah.
Does Atlanta have three cabin? Detroit no longer does.
Yes, Atlanta has the 330s.
Because there's 330s, 2 and 3 cabin, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because Detroit only gets a 2 cabin.
I'll have to look. But what I was going to say was that, if I do that, though, that what I have to lose is the fact that I already have I have an ANA business class right now on the date I need.
Book another reward.
Book another one.
You've got an open jaw on you.
I have an open jaw. I have an open jaw and a stopover, and I need to get from the open.
In your case, that may actually work more favorably if you drop the return segments as long as you use it before the expiration of the ticket, because you've already flown half of it. It's like a revenue ticket.
Right.
They can't reprice the whole thing.
So you're saying then change it when I get there or whatever if it opens up?
What if you booked a reward with a domestic segment with a stopover and you flew the first segment?
Because you think they can't reprice?
They can't reprice. United Continental has never been able to reprice an award once you're in the middle of it. You have to stay within the same categories.
Yeah, but can they if they up the price of the category?
I'm going to give you an example, a personal example. I had a while back, I booked Turkish first.
Yes.
And when I got to, this is when the old 770W wet leases, and I got to Istanbul, and the flight attendant, or the handler came up to me and said, "Oh, Mr. Miller, good news for you. We've gotten you a day room." I said, "That's interesting, because our layover was only about 3 hours." He's like, no, the flight's going to be delayed 3 or 4 hours, so we've gone ahead and set you up with a day room. I said, "Well, but I have a connection to JFK that's only 3 hours, so if you delay me that long, I'm screwed." And she said, "Oh, well, your travel agent will fix that for you." And rather than kill her, I just solved the problem. But,
yes, because
I was on the way to Barcelona.
Oh, you're right. This is the Barcelona.
This is the Barcelona New Year's.
Barcelona.
It's not an X. Sorry. Barcelona. By the way, they've applied to declare independence again.
Really?
Again? The Catalonian.
They want.
They're trying to declare independence again. So anyway, no, but I ended up changing my ticket instead of being Cairo, Istanbul, JFK, Cairo, Istanbul, Open Jaw, Barcelona, Heathrow, Newark. They repriced it with the Open Jaw and gave me the 20,000 point difference back between business and first later.
Last time I tried to reprice,
oh, then you have to like scream and yell, but they can do it.
I'm sure they can, but it's not.
They would probably find a way to do it.
It's not automated.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an. So you're saying book an award with a
Boston, Newark, on something simple.
And then fly Boston, Newark, and then say I got to change this flight. I don't know when.
Yeah.
I mean, that could work. I could see it theoretically.
Yeah, weird. So, like, say, book Boston, Newark, and then 2 days, like, Boston, Newark on the 28th, and then on March, or on February 1st, Newark, Frankfurt, and then a return later. Because you need a return.
Yeah, it needs to be a round trip. It definitely needs to be a round trip.
To get a stopover. Yeah.
And then, after you fly the first segment, be like, I need to change the dates on these other two segments, but don't know when yet, and just push it out.
Yeah. Because they won't refund it once you've flown a segment.
True. They won't refund it. Do they have to honor it?
Well, they have to honor it at that point.
Yes, they have to let you fly.
Because you haven't violated any of the rules if you have the built-in stopover.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Well, we don't know what the rules are anymore.
One of the problems is how many miles are you risking to try it, right? If they like say, oh, no, you're screwed, then are you at 100,000 miles for a domestic one-way?
No.
When you could have just returned that 100,000
to the rate. The worst they can do is take the amount for the domestic one-way. Right, if that's the game
as published, if you take a round trip ticket, only fly one way, end up not using the return, they keep the whole thing.
Right, but if you're following the rules, it's a valid stopover.
Yeah, but
you're allowed to.
Stephen raises a good point. Do we know what the actual rules are?
Does anyone know?
I don't think anyone at United.
We have an acquaintance who seems to be constantly filing dot complaints for when rules, air quotes, are violated, and yet we don't know what those rules are. So. Yeah.
I'm tempted to file complaints over some of the stuff I've had.
I've had some recent stuff where I questioned their logic, and I was tempted as well.
All right, so just for those who are keeping score at home with the beer tasting, we're on now to the Colinopolis Original. Have I poured you some of this?
I have not.
They stopped listening a long time ago.
Yeah, I would imagine. So. I don't know how people still listen to this at all. I shorted you a little bit.
Right.
The Colinopolis Original, much better than their Pilsner, in my opinion.
I still like the.
You like the Pilsner?
I like the
Southern second one, right?
Yeah, it was tasty.
Yeah, it had like a sweetness to it. It was a good flavor. Anyway,
we'll post the name.
So while we're bitching about United,
the A320,
they canceled their Airbus order.
Oh no!
From how long ago?
Forever.
13 years ago or something.
Yeah, they canceled delivery of like a dozen A319s.
Was it a dozen or 15?
I thought it was 6 each.
It could be. I don't know. These were
orders that were delayed in 2001 and then delayed and then delayed and then delayed. Now they finally just said, you know what, we're not taking them.
These are probably going to replace the 737s.
Yeah. They had, 12 firm and a bunch of options? What was with that?
Well, I mean, before they knew they were going to replace the 737s before the downturn and they went to their reliance on CRJs, they were going to replace them.
But let's look at the upside of this, guys. That's 12 less
Airbus.
Airbuses filled with Recaro slimline seats.
Yes.
That is a plus side.
That is a plus.
Yeah. When I flew up yesterday with a friend of ours from Brussels that was slimline seats, and his first comment was, this might be the worst seat I've ever sat in.
I was actually surprised. The Air Baltic seat was more comfortable, I think, than the Lufthansa one. They're both Recaro slimlines.
Do they have a padding option or some kind of padding option?
There was some padding. It wasn't just like the weird netting.
Yeah.
It wasn't particularly soft or good padding, but there was some padding. It was interesting.
So back in the Continental days, the executives would sit through, at least on the business class seats, they'd sit through overnight tests of the seats. Do you think anyone at United went through any tests with these and had to actually suffer through that?
Absolutely not.
No. Also, by the way, back in the old days, executives would fly coach on domestic segments, so at least got the upgrades. And as I understand, that doesn't necessarily happen anymore.
No.
So wait, what wasn't there a comparison you were saying that is taking place now? Smizik is a lot like...
Oh, yeah, this is great. So there's some people now suggesting that Smizik is basically the new Frank Lorenzo.
I think that's a little extreme.
That might be the worst insult, though.
He's union-busting the flight attendants, and that's why.
I'd say it's the other
that's
changes
why?
That make him worse.
I mean, if anything, Anderson was the one that actually busted the flight attendant union.
I don't get it at all, but I read that the other day, and... Had I been drinking this beer, I would have snorted it, and it would have been very fun. I had to close my browser and walk away from the computer because I almost lost it. Yeah, I know. Someone's comparing him to Lorenzo as a union buster. That he's taking the hardware from the various little components and shifting it to the other airline, quote unquote, with better work rules and blowing up the other unions.
But United was going to fail anyways on the path it was on.
Doesn't matter.
No one cares about facts.
Can't Sorry, my bad.
We can't have those in a podcast. Edit that out.
I issue an apology for my fact statements.
It's about time you managed to apologize.
That was sincere, too. So lastly, and kind of important, Delta Sky Club prices.
We said the important thing for the end. Is anyone still listening?
Yeah, that's how you get them in, right?
Hello?
You make them listen to the whole thing. And give, you give them the real important info at the end so they listen to the whole thing, right?
You've been watching the news, I see.
I have. Sky Club.
Does our producer approve of this approach?
It's what we call a tease in industry.
So Delta Sky Club prices are going up. They're going up pretty significantly.
Drastically.
What is it, $6.95 or something?
The current $450 membership will now cost $6.95.
That's one person, too, right?
No, that's with guests.
With guests. That's the key right there.
That's the key. They're going to have two types of memberships. There will be an individual membership and an executive membership. The individual membership will be just you, and that's going to stay at the $450 price when it goes back on sale at some point eventually. Later this spring.
Takes them a long time to reprogram that.
Yeah, apparently. Executive membership, which includes two guests or your family, is now $6.95. So it's a more than 50% increase in price. And
they're taking away the guest benefit from folks who get in via credit card. So if you have the American Express Platinum card, Centurion card, what other card? The Reserve card?
Delta Reserve card.
The Delta Reserve card. You can only bring yourself in. And guests are, was it $25?
$29.
This reeks. I'm sorry.
It's interesting. They're claiming that the clubs are still too crowded.
And I was going to say, if it actually reduces the club crowd, it may not be a bad thing. I would love United to do this because you can never find a seat.
Don't say that. I get in by the credit card.
You have other ways of getting in, too.
I guess the question becomes, like, it sucks that this is happening in some ways, right? The price is going up, but isn't this sort of what supply and demand is supposed to be?
Yep.
Right? If that many people are getting in and willing to pay for it in some way, are they going to continue to pay more? Like, you raise the price when you've exhausted your supply.
But my question is, let's say that it doesn't decrease.
For the record, I only did half of my first semester of Econ 101, and then I dropped the class. So that's what I know about supply and demand.
I mean, I'm a little surprised by this, because American
Express...
And
I was failing, which is why I dropped
American Express owns such a large chunk of Delta that I'm surprised they got away with these changes on the American Express side.
Yeah, Delta had an awesome tweet a couple days after the original announcement that was basically like, hey, Amex cardholders or Platinum cardholders, you're now going to have all the same benefits as an individual Sky Club member. Congratulations. It's like, wait, what? Like, they were making it sound like this great thing. It was like, you guys are kind of, I mean, I guess I know it's marketing and so it's always going to be a little dirty, but it was a little dirty.
But I'm trying to understand, like, if let's say it doesn't decrease the amount of people in the lounge, or it only slightly decreases the amount of people in the lounge, was it worth it? I mean, now they're just making more money.
Well, how many people?
Yes, then it was completely worth it, right? If you're the company, you're...
That just gives them reason to jack it up more.
Yeah, but then you get people who are saying, well, I'm not getting what I paid for. You said this was going to reduce numbers in the lounge because it was so crowded. I'm paying more, and the lounge is still crowded.
I agree with him. I think that
there's a lot of
people... don't bring in guests. Like let's say the American Express, the Platinum Business Class business card. If it's a business person, they're just by themselves. They're using it to get in. They're most likely not bringing a guest. So I don't think the numbers are going to decrease significantly. It's going to be the same problem. And they're going to have some other thing to deal with.
But see, I bring in one guest pretty much weekly to the Newark Club.
You're part of the problem.
I'm part of the problem.
Are you going to apologize for that?
I'm sorry. And that was not sincere. I bring him in though, and he actually pays for wine, which I think is idiotic. I think he should just go to, what is it, Vino? Yeah, I'm like, just go down the
wines.
Yeah,
it's better wines.
Yeah.
There's actually that one at Newark and C3 out at the end. Remember where we had the bubbles before?
Yeah, that's where I told him to go. I was like,
I don't know where the restaurant is, but C3 all the way towards the end on the right side. It's really good.
Le Grand Comptoir.
I believe their wine list is pretty solid.
Yeah, it's a good place. It's one of the better airport establishments.
But he's willing to come into the club. I guess he likes free cheese. I don't know.
I mean, there's times when I've just stopped avoiding going to the club unless I need an agent. That's the only time.
I did my flight out here on American out of T8, out of JFK, with no lounge access, and was pleasantly surprised how easy it was to sit there. Have a drink if I wanted one, have a snack if I wanted one, sit in the corner with Wi-Fi that worked. I have a Boingo account, so I mean, it was free, or included, just like whatever else. But it was surprisingly pleasant to not have to deal with that. I will say in Europe I like having priority pass because the lounges here are nice.
Yes.
So you're the lounges in the US suck ass, so why do you pay for it?
You're saying that you don't want to hunt for a seat for 45 minutes at Newark in the C3 lounge and try, you know, find somewhere to sit for you and another person? You don't enjoy
that? While nursing my McCormick's rum?
Yeah, you don't enjoy that?
Actually, they have even rum still on the freebie listed?
Yeah, it's
I think so.
It's rubbing alcohol.
You can get regular rum.
It's like McCormick's rum?
Yeah.
Okay,
it's rum-flavored rubbing alcohol.
Yeah. But it's actually, as long as we're rambling and not talking about anything useful, which is to say, as long as I'm still talking, I was talking to someone the other day about the United Clubs and the way that they're staffed. The bartenders and such are outsourced.
Yep.
And have been for a couple years now. Front desk is still United employees, right? What are the odds that United sets the rules on what the food and beverages versus they have told the contractor, you have to provide something that meets these vague criteria and the contractor is making miserable, like is choosing these things. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think that's the case. I think United is dictating who supplies because that's part of their global contract for supply.
I mean, it's the same everywhere you go.
Yeah, it's the same food on the plane in a lot of cases.
Are they not contracting out the same company to run all the bartenders?
No, because I think the bartenders aren't Chelsea.
Right, but neither is the booze, is it?
No, but Chelsea's buying the booze.
And then giving it to
Chelsea supplies the booze for the lounges?
No, for the planes. So it's all under one global contract.
We're talking about the lounge, though.
Right, but I'm saying, like, if you look at the food aspect, the carrots, the Milanos, all that stuff is the same that you will occasionally see on planes. It's just part of that contract.
They're buying it at a discounted rate from
the Chelsea's buying.
I know how we'll find out. When the London United Club happens, if they serve all that crap rum, then it's the same.
What are you smoking?
What do you mean?
When is the London United Club ever?
It's going to be their own club. They need their own branded.
July 2nd.
They said they have so many flights that they need their own branded club. And it's going to look like Chicago.
There's going to be three clubs in the new T2, like for Star Alliance.
I want an apology.
I'm sorry. And that one was sincere.
We don't qualify our apologies. And this one wasn't sincere. So
I'm not really sorry.
I'm not really sorry, but I'm required by rule to say it.
Screw you.
Because technically that's going to be the case. They're going to have those same...
How many do they have? They have like three to Houston, five or six to Newark,
five
to Dulles.
Three to Chicago.
One to LA.
One to San Francisco.
That's a lot of flights.
It is.
Cleveland. The hublet doesn't get a flight.
By the way, as long as we're talking, circling back to Delta screwing club memberships, as long as we're talking about that, one other thing to note, they not included in the press release, but mentioned or updated on their webpage, all contract lounges are now considered business class lounges, not Sky Club lounges or something.
So you can't access them as a
Sky Team Elite Plus, right? So Delta Gold Medallion or higher. If you're in coach, you no longer get access in roughly 40 international departments.
That's where you're going to get the revolt. That's like a useful thing when you're international.
So that's your, I'm flying on business trip and I went to Bangkok and I'm coming home and I'm flying Bangkok, Narita, Atlanta or whatever it is or Seattle. And I'm in coach because my GPU didn't clear. Even though I bought an M fare, which was ridiculously expensive. and now I can't use the lounge.
Or even think about like a partner lounge in, say, Europe, right?
There's Pisa.
No, if it's a partner lounge, it's the contract lounge.
So like Pisa was one of the examples that came up. Pisa is a random, airport operated lounge. And they fly a 763 there all summer long. And every top tier elite who's in the back is not going to have lounge access now.
Dubai, for example, the Mahaba lounge or whatever they're on. Daba, Marhaba, all those lounges.
I just like listening to you try to pronounce that.
Yeah, they're all on that
Dunada
list.
Danada and all those.
Yeah, 40-something cities.
In Singapore, too. I don't think they have a branded lounge. No. They use one of those...
And the other interesting thing is that a lot of these places have SkyTeam lounges. Like, Bangkok has a China Air and a Air France lounge in it. But the flight time, or a Korean lounge,
it's closed.
Yeah. Or it's inaccessible. It's in a place where you can't get to.
No, Bangkok's all the same.
In the T gates.
So anyway, Delta sort of screwed people on the lounge rules this week.
You think others follow suit?
US Airways is apparently already there, at least on the Elite Access version. Do others follow suit on stopping guests and having tiered memberships? Why not?
I think it depends on the population problem. The United Clubs are atrociously packed. I haven't seen the same on the American side. I can't really speak of U.S. Air.
Are you going to have issues now on the American side, though? Now with the U.S. is right. It's a much bigger population.
I will say that the T8 at JFK, I didn't really notice any changes as far as now the U.S. Air moved there, and TAM and a bunch of, like, it's not as crowded. I don't know if they've staffed the lines better. The lounges aren't, you don't notice
it. When was the last time you went through security at T8 between 4 and 6 p.m.? Do you remember having done that recently, ever?
Yeah, just recently.
It was a shit show the other day.
Security is bad.
I guess.
Security is a mess.
No, even pre-check had a line. Yeah,
really?
I was in Premiere, whatever, One World Ruby. My AA girl says, the woman didn't want to let me in. She's like, well, it's not printed on the boarding pass. I'm like, you see right here where it says One World Ruby? You see your sign with that little red dot on it?
That's what that means.
And she's like, well, it's not printed on here. I'm like, I'll let them know next time.
She thought your boarding pass needed to say One World Turd.
Yes, or something like that. The Premiere line, like for Elites, went through the zigzag of the ropes, out the ropes, and it's sort of on the side, and like all the way down the hall to the next set of check-in gates.
Okay, well, I apologize.
Was that sincere?
I am very sorry that this did not happen to me.
I
just haven't noticed it. I don't know. I guess I'm talking more about the lounges also.
Yeah, like, yeah. I'm sorry
about that. But we got to wrap things up. We got dinner in a restaurant that was built in like the 15th century.
And then we're going to hit up this place that has 80 beers.
80 beers.
Yes.
We're going to drink all of them.
So why don't you tell everybody really quick where...
The 7:30 beer is pretty good.
Is it?
Yeah. I'm on to that one now.
It's almost 7:30.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So let's go around and tell everybody where you can find you.
I'm on Twitter at MundoSurfer, and I'm on Tumblr, even though Steven hates it, at mundosurfer.tumblr.com.
I'm on upgrd.com/Foz or on Twitter as FozM.
Wandering Air Man, WANDR.me.
And I'm Steven Seagraves. You can find me at badice.com. I'm on Twitter at SSeagraves. If you can follow Points Hoarder Podcast on Twitter, at Points Hoarder. Leave us a comment. Leave us a review. We'd like to hear from you. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye from Vilnius.
Adios.
No, wrong language.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
And cut.
Thanks for joining us for the Points Hoarder Podcast, where stockpiling points is serious fun.